Support for All Sides comes from Ohio State's College of Arts and Sciences, which presents a new play called Apotheosis, a fantasy based on the life and work of Edgar Allan Poe. Performances take place April 4th through the 14th at Ohio State's Roy Bowen Theater. For more information, go to theater.osu.edu.
Welcome to All Sides with Dan Fisher. Bob Ney was a popular six-term congressman from Ohio. He'd won 66% of the vote in his district in 2004, but just 2 years later, he announced that he would not seek re-election, and his ties to lobbyist Jack Abramoff would lead to criminal charges and a two-and-a-half-year prison sentence that started in January 2007. He served 11 months in federal prison and since has written a book about his life and his life in politics. The title of the book is Sideswiped: Lessons Learned, Courtesy of the Hitmen of Capitol Hill. And he's with us today to talk about his life and the book. These days, Bob Ney, you may hear him. He is working as a political analyst for the Talk Radio News Service. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I did 17 months.
Did you do 17 months? Okay. Sorry about that.
No, it's okay. When you do 17.
Well, you did the halfway house.
That's right.
I apologize.
That's
yes.
Okay.
You were in the prison for 11 months, and then after that, 6 more
months. Because already people say, well, he should have done 30 years. What do you mean he did 11 months?
Right. Sorry about that. You're right. 6 months in the Elvis house.
Correct.
In Columbus,
Ohio.
And you're living in Heath, near Newark.
Newark, yes.
And you stayed pretty much in the central Ohio area. You're getting the most press for this book, from what I can tell, because of your characterization of now House Speaker John Boehner, another Republican from Ohio. I didn't count the paragraphs, but I read that about a quarter of the book was about the current House Speaker and personally and his role in your decision to resign just before Election Day in 2006. So tell us first, in your own words now, what you make of House Speaker John Boehner back in the day and what the criticism is about.
And the publicity, you're right, on the book, and came out of that. Sort of the one paragraph of my statement about Boehner. There was, one.
He'd like to drink wine,
right.
And
I said it in a series, in a sequence. You know, wine drinking, cigarette smoking, blah.
That's right.
And so that paragraph, once the speaker, frankly, which I thought he would just say no comment, but once they went further, that is what actually stirred the publicity. So when Michael Steele, the speaker's office, said, "Well, we're just trying to sell books," well, their comments are the comments that helped to fuel this thing. I frankly thought no comment would be the answer. And I'm glad for shows like this because I have a chance to talk about the entire book. A lot of people think that book is all about John Boehner, 400-some pages. But what I said, and a fourth of the book is about him, because for the first time I've shown the involvement actually of Boehner with the Abramoff scandal. Now, not Boehner directly tied with Abramoff doing favors, but his involvement in an indirect way through a very complicated scenario that I've laid out in the book. As far as John Boehner, though, if we were sitting here and it would have been 2006 before I did my prison time, before I went, for the plea, and you asked me what I thought of John Boehner, the resentment flow of waterfall resentments would have flown out of my mouth.
Because he had
time.
Promised you, if you resigned peacefully, a job that would pay you enough money to maintain your
comparable money,
and the funding to fight these charges.
Yeah, and I can remember very clearly because when one is in such a trauma in their lifetime, now whether people think bad or good of me, it is a personal trauma when you're sitting there and, you're about to face prison or not face prison. Now, at that time, though, what got my hopes high, I came off of the 2006 primary. My consultant, Public Opinion Strategies, a pollster, told me back in January Mickey Mouse would defeat me in June of 2006 in a primary. Mickey Mouse was his quote. This was a longtime consultant of mine, Glenn Bolger. I decided, after talking to my campaign consultant, Matt Parker, to run. And we won with 69% of the vote. I came out of that primary, and politics. You've been around this town, full steam ahead. This is it, and I'm on to victory in November. It's going to be tight. We thought against Zach Space, who was running against me, but we felt we would win by about 2 points from what we saw if we could get about $150,000-some. The end result is about 70 days before the election or so in August, I received a phone call at my home in Heath. I lived there at that time. It was John Boehner, majority leader. John said, you know, it's best for you and your family. And he said, I understand your son has some medical conditions. And I don't know where that came from.
But so that wasn't...
That was, I put it in the book. I didn't bother to even ask him. He just said, I understand, too, you have some medical bills. So I don't know where that came
from.
Well,
we all have medical bills.
But, you know, in politics, a story becomes, you know, nine lives. So anyway, he said, if you stop running, not resign from Congress, but stop running and officially send your letter, because they were under a time frame. I had only so many days to do that. And I remember very clearly, he said, I will find you a job that is comparable in money to what you are making, and most important to me, he said, I will raise you money for your legal defense fund to help, quote, put this behind you. And then John Boehner said, you have 24 hours, Bob, and if you don't decide in 24 hours, the deal will never be revived again.
Now, for the record, John Boehner's spokesman, Michael Steele, has completely denied this has ever happened, any part of it, that the conversation ever took place.
Well, there's a news story, if one goes on the internet, that alludes to this conversation,
okay,
where they admit there was a conversation between the two of us. And that was a while back. That was on the internet.
I'm talking with Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and the author of a new book. It's called Sideswiped, Lessons Learned, Courtesy of the Hitmen of Capitol Hill. If you have a question or comment for Bob Ney, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or check out our Facebook page. You can post your question or comment there. So
this is the most important statement I can make on all this. What Michael Steele was saying is completely untrue. This also, I would point out, was not done in a vacuum. And what I'm trying to say here today is what I've said before. There are others who are aware of this. There are others that at some point in time will confirm this. This was not a secret on Capitol Hill. And so clearly, either Michael Steele has not gotten the straight story from John Boehner. Everything I have said is correct. John Boehner offered me that deal. John Boehner asked me to step out. John Boehner then said, we want Senator Joy Padgett. And I said, what about Senator Carnes? Nothing against Joy Padgett, but what about Senator Carnes? And he said, no, it has to be State Senator Joy Padgett. So I remember every aspect of this conversation. I then sat around waiting for the job. I sent my letter to Bob Taft. You have to do that in the process to the governor. Sat around, and then I called back because I had originally called within 24 hours. I was afraid of losing the deal. Mm-hmm. Then I called back after that. I couldn't get the janitor to return my phone calls. Just couldn't. It didn't happen. So now Boehner's spokesman, Michael Steele, Boehner says it's sad is what his comment is. Well, you know, Speaker Boehner can say what he wants. Michael Steele took it to the point where he said, you know, Bob Ney is a convicted felon, is a known, you know, liar, has lied. So I'll give him those two. You know, I'm a convicted felon and I'm a known liar. So I'll give Michael Steele those two things. There are others who are not convicted felons and who are not known liars that will be able to confirm this.
I was going to ask, why not name them as well?
Well, because there's a process here. And if, in fact, someone feels that the speaker, the third in line to the presidency, is not telling the truth, there's a process where citizens can question this. They can actually file something. If they want to file it or somebody wants to investigate this, I'm not going to put people's names out here, but if they want to investigate it, I'll be glad to turn over the information to them. I mean, they made an error in responding to this book in that manner. No comment would have been more appropriate than it simply never happened. This conversation happened, and there are those who are very, very credible that at some point in time, I'm sure, will be called upon to clarify that.
The subtitle of the book, Lessons Learned, Courtesy of the Hitmen of Capitol Hill. First of all, what do you mean by hitmen? It could mean a lot of different things.
That's right. I deliberately, and of course, if you look at the book, there's a bullet hole in a window
there
in front
is.
Of the
at
Capitol.
First, yes.
Okay. That wasn't mine, but just, it looks okay. I very, very carefully thought this title up, and I'll tell you why. Sideswiped. When you're sideswiped in a car accident, that doesn't mean that the person that sideswiped you is totally at fault. I could be speeding, and a person sideswipes me, and they're intoxicated. So there's two people at fault. And that's important to me because I'm not saying that a group of people sat down and said, now, let's get Bob Ney to meet Jack Abramoff. Then let's get Bob Ney to illegally accept some food, sushi, booze, a trip to Scotland. Let's have Bob not report the trip totally correct in the manner he should. And let's have Bob sign some letters for Jack Abramoff, and then we can get him to prison and get an appointment for somebody that Bush wants in the administration. It's Alice Fisher I refer to. That's a complicated part. So they didn't do that. I did wrong. I had criminal behavior. I did not follow the ethics of the Congress. I committed criminal acts. But in the chapter The Perfect Storm, it shows outside forces that came into play that once I did my idiocy, once I did my criminal acts, once I made my mistakes, they seized it. And John Boehner was one of the persons, along with his staff and a former staffer of mine, who seized an opportunity also. So that's why I came up with Sideswipe. The hitmen of Capitol Hill are the people that are still there, the people that operated within the system to utilize my wrongdoing for some of their own purposes.
In other words, to deflect is the point. You make the deflects attention on...
Well, it did a lot of things. And again, today, I don't hate John Boehner. In fact, I have to tell you, John Boehner going back on a deal to me is probably saved my life. It probably saved my life. I was still going strong. I was going to run come, you know, Hades or high water. I was going to do it. And I stopped. And then when he didn't come through with the deal, I was losing my money. I didn't have legal defense funds. The Justice Department, ironically or timing-wise, within a couple of weeks said, we're going to indict you, to my attorneys. And my whole world collapsed. I went to prison. I went to rehab. I walked in prison 234 pounds. I sit today at 171. High blood pressure, cholesterol, you name it, I had it. Alcoholic, three packs of cigarettes a day. I was beating Boehner in the smoking habit. Now think about that. So having said that, I have to say that probably John Boehner lying to me saved my life. So I can't sit here today and say, I just can't stand that man. I can't do it. A part of me says, thank you, Speaker Boehner, for not telling the truth. Thank you for what you did to me at that time. Maybe, it saved my life. So today I'm a little bit different attitude towards John Boehner. I'm telling a story. I'm disappointed he didn't just say, you know, no comment, or just didn't say, yeah, we cut a deal. So what?
My guest once again is Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman, author of a new book. It's called Sideswiped, Lessons Learned, courtesy of the hitmen of Capitol Hill. You can give us a call, 614-292-8513. If you have a question for Bob Ney, you can also go to our Facebook page or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from the Homeport Noble on Long condominiums, offering home ownership opportunities in the King Lincoln District, featuring a diverse community with a mix of historic and newly built homes and condos. Details at homeportohio.org/NOBO on Long. Support comes from Varmint Guard Environmental Services, the company with the gold-lettered black trucks. Varmint Guard has served Central Ohio for 30 years, helping to treat and prevent pest and wildlife problems. More information at 614-794-8169 or varmintguard.com.
Checking the weather quickly, it's a pleasure to give you this forecast. Partly sunny today with a high of 43, clear tonight a low of 26. Then on Tuesday, sunny skies and a high of 43. By Wednesday, sunny skies and a high of 48 degrees. We're finally getting into the spring weather. Right now, though, at our studios, we have 37 degrees here on the campus of The Ohio State University.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm talking with Bob Ney. He's former Ohio congressman, author of a new book. It's called Sideswiped, Lessons Learned, courtesy of the hitmen Capitol Hill, Bob Ney was a popular six-term congressman from Ohio. He'd won 66% of the vote in his district in 2004. But just 2 years later, because of his relationship, his ties to lobbyist Jack Abramoff, he would face criminal charges and a two-and-a-half-year prison sentence that started in January 2007. He served 17 months, 11 of those in federal prison and six of those at Alva's house, halfway house in Columbus. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Thank you.
Part three of the book is about the Abramoff scandal. And I was wondering how you figured out where to even begin to tell that story, because it is very complicated. I surely don't want to go through, chapter and verse of that today. But where do you decide to start with a scandal like that?
That's a wonderful question. Nobody's asked me that question either. This book took 4 years where I wasn't going to do the book, et cetera. When I came to the Abramoff part, Neil Volz has written a wonderful book, I believe, my former chief of staff that worked for Jack Abramoff and pled guilty, Into the Sun, and it's a memoir. I didn't read that book. And Neil and I communicate. I did my chapter first, then I read the book. Neil Volz's book, because I didn't want to read. Everybody has their version of history. I was a history teacher by degree, and recollections. And Neil had some recollections where he was incorrect in a few things of where we were, and it just shows human, memory. So on my part, I went back and I wrote this. Then I read Neil's book, and I found the Sun Cruise, and I add this with Neil Volz's permission, was the Sun Cruise affair I had with Abramoff, where I wrote this letter on behalf of this cruise ship, blah, blah, blah. Neil had a better account than I did. So it was so complicated to sit back and remember this and that. And I must have taken the most, probably almost 12 days I took time-wise to just put all the Abramoff stuff together and then try to make sense of it in a time frame. It was horribly difficult because it's not just as easy as I went to Jack's restaurant and I did this and I did that. It was very, very... It was very complicated.
Cliss in Columbus. Is that your name?
Yes.
I'm Cliff. Sorry. Oh, Cliff. Okay. Welcome to the show, Cliff. You're on the air with Bob Ney.
Thanks, Ann. I just want to say I've read Bob's book. I think it's a wonderful book. It's really touching. And I couldn't recommend it more strongly to your listeners.
What do you think makes it a great book?
Well, Bob reflects on the profound issues of life in terms of our spiritual life and how his experience in the political process brought him to a better spiritual understanding of life. It's profound, it's touching, it's deep, and it's coming from somebody who's been at the center of power. And people probably don't remember this, but Bob had the guts to challenge Wayne Hayes, who had left Congress, the most powerful position in Congress, in disgrace, and then ran for the Ohio legislature, mm-hmm. and was serving in the Ohio legislature, and Bob had the courage to challenge Wayne Hayes in that election. And I remember Wayne Hayes putting out the word that anyone who helped Bob Ney would face consequences. Bob was a reformer. Bob was a courageous...
I want to talk to Bob about how he got into politics. Cliff, thanks for the call.
Sure.
Yeah.
I want to thank the caller for the wonderful comments. And also he hit at the spiritual side, which I appreciate because I wrote this in India and I put a lot of time into soul searching. There's some warts in here. My mother said, why did you write some of those things? But I want to thank the caller. I think he touched on, I appreciate the comments, but I think he also touched on the spiritual side of the book.
So going back to the scandal and your role in it, Jack Abramoff went to prison as well. Do you see yourself as some kind of fall guy, the one from the other side of the aisle, or not the other side of the aisle, but the one from the institution of Congress that had to take the hit? How do you see yourself in terms of Jack Abramoff and what he did and everyone else that was involved?
Well, first of all, I own up to the fact I did these things.
Right.
Now, somebody may say, well, everybody in Washington did this. Well, okay, everybody, a lot of people in Washington may have done it, but I shouldn't have done it. When I was in prison, I used to sponsor guys that had drug offenses. They would say, well, Bob, I sold pot, but my neighbor was selling heroin, and they arrested me. And I said, well, you shouldn't have been selling pot. So it's the same thing in the sense that I shouldn't have been doing what I did. So I own up to that. But at the end of the day, and there's a very complicated chapter in here with Alice Fisher and—
From the Attorney General's
Attorney
Office.
Attorney General's Office. And at the end of the day, and Jack Abramoff answers, well, the only reason— others didn't go away is because Bob had some issues with gaming in London. Now, I do not deny that my gaming in London did not allow the justice. It allowed the Justice Department to squeeze me. I understand that,
but they were not reporting the winnings.
Not reporting all of the winnings. Mm-hmm. Reporting some of them. But that's not. I didn't get a charge on that. Jack Abramoff actually recently basically said, "Well, he and I really didn't do anything." Bob got convicted because of the gambling money. That's not true. Jack and I did things. We did things wrong. Now, others were involved. And I raised these questions. When Senator McCain had his hearings on the Indian affairs, Jack Abramoff had a secret business with Ralph Reed, the former head of the Christian Coalition. Ralph got money to try to close down a casino, and Jack got money from the same Indian tribe, unfortunately using the Indians, to try to open a casino. Why did Senator McCain only call Abramoff? Why did he not call Ralph Reed and others involved in this entire entity, this mess? When the hearings were underway, only my name was raised. Others received contributions from Abramoff. Tom DeLay was the man that was front and center. There were contributions to Tom DeLay's daughter's baby shower from Jack Abramoff. $1 million went to Tom DeLay's former chief of staff into this nonprofit entity. $1 million from Jack Abramoff. On 60 Minutes, Jack Abramoff said, I had 100 members in my pocket and I spent $1 million. Now, as far as anybody else, you know, being put away for this, I can't make that judgment. I wasn't Alberto Gonzalez, the Attorney General. I'm not Jack Abramoff, who, you know, I'm sure told the Justice Department everything he knew. So in the book, I lay out why I think I went away. And once I went away, Jack Abramoff was away. Bob Ney was away. The two bad guys were away. Nobody else had to go away. Now, I'm not saying I would have enjoyed anyone else doing time. I'm not sitting here saying I can say who should have done time, but there were a ton of people involved. I think once Jack and I went away, the whole thing evaporated. Alice Fisher, who was in trouble for her appointment. Now, why was Alice Fisher in the Attorney General's office in trouble? She was a Bush appointee. Because, quote, Senator Levin on the floor of the U.S. Senate. She is too close to Tom DeLay's defense team, and she has done nothing about Jack Abramoff. Miraculously, Boehner goes back on his deal. I get the indictment call from the Justice Department. I make a plea deal, and by September the 13th, Alice Fisher gets her appointment, which was in trouble. So I think I and Jack were very convenient that Alice Fisher got her job done. And why was that important? Alice had been part of the cover-up of the torture of Guantanamo Bay. I mean, this book has intricacies, including the guy shot in his car, Gus Bullis, with the Abramoff affair. I mean, there's a lot of things to it. The Help America Vote Act, for the first time I reveal that it is true that my former chief of staff, Dave DeStefano, tried to get me, and he was a lobbyist for Diebold. He tried to get me to fix that bill, which I didn't do for Diebold's interest. So I think there were some things I'm not even aware of here, and I was kind of put out front of trying to fix these elections when I think others were involved. There's a lot of conspiracy and intricacies in here, but I think I connect the dots if one reads the book to show the outside influences.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman, author of Sideswiped, Lessons Learned, Courtesy of the Hitmen of Capitol Hill. Questions, comments, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. org. What would you change about the system to avoid, I guess, the human foibles of people like Jack Abramoff, yourself?
Well, I have written this book to show what I did, to own up to what I did, and to show others who were involved. I did that. There are other parts of the book, the spiritual part with India. There's a part about prisons. I wrote a lot about prisons because people can't speak out. They can't be on shows like this. They can't write books, and they're under pressure. And if we don't change this, we're going to put people back in prison all the time. The recidivity rate's going to be huge. We warehouse people. So I've written this book for a wide variety of reasons. I also have not given all the solutions in this book, but I put at the end, is the barrel still corrupt? And my answer is yes. Now, how can we change it? It is so easy. Today, John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, and Nancy Pelosi, because look, this goes on both sides of the aisle, the minority leader, could within 24 hours so dramatically change our country that people would gasp. It would be an aha moment for America. The two of them could impose brand new rules. One, that no congressman or staffer at any point in time, and they sign a pledge, will ever go into the lobbying business, period. If you want to go to Congress and you want to be a staffer, you're going to be there just like I went, for the right reasons. And then it turns bad. And there's a lot of good people on Capitol Hill, so they could do that immediately. They could quit assessing people to be chairmen. And I forgot to bring it for you today, unfortunately. I found my assessment sheet. Chairman Bob Ney, House Administration, $150,000. I found it last night in a box at home. I was assessed $150,000. Some assessed $500,000. Some assessed $1 million to be a chairman. Both parties do it. The other thing they can do is announce.
This is meaning how much money you have to raise.
Yes, you want, right, to be chairman. That's what you're going to contribute. They can do public financing of elections. They can eliminate the interest groups. They can eliminate these leadership PACs that feed the entire system. There's so much they could do internally. And one other thing, and I will be quiet, but I have to say this. What Jack Abramoff and I did is now codified into law under steroids. Let's pretend I'm a lobbyist and you're a congresswoman, and I want to take you to Alaska and we want to go hunting, have a $3,000 dinner, and I'll raise you $100,000. I can do it. Then tomorrow we go to Las Vegas. I take some members of your family, some of your staff. I pay for the whole trip. We have a $4,000 dinner. I raise you $125,000. It's all legal under the law, the travel, the entire nine yards. They have done nothing but codify the corruption that Jack Abramoff and I and others did.
You talk about people go into this for good reasons. And yet, from the very beginning of the book, and I guess what I want to talk about is the good reasons. From the very beginning of the book, the story of your life in politics, the reasons always seem to be, and this is a pattern throughout the book, it'll be good for me. It'll get me this or it'll get me that. You know, you started working for the Roads Administration. You started getting to know people. You didn't really want to get into politics, but you wanted to get a job. You wanted to do this, wanted to do that. It was about you. I didn't sense at the beginning of your career that you had some greater vision of public policy or how you wanted to make the world a better place.
I didn't.
And I don't get that from a lot of the people that you ended up rubbing elbows with in Washington.
What I ended up doing was I wanted to go to law school. So I wanted a recommendation from Jim Rhodes. And I got involved in politics. And then all of a sudden, I liked politics. And I didn't want to go to law school. And I received a teaching degree. And I thought, okay, I did my stint. I couldn't find a teaching job. Then I came back from Iran because I was teaching over there and there was a revolution. And then I decided I did like the public policy end, particularly. I was dared on a bet to run. I ran. And once I ran, I really liked it. I was able to, and that's when I really enjoyed the public policy end, working legislation in Ohio, producing state budgets, which affected the school systems, et cetera. And I denied running for Congress for such a long time. I said, I want to run out there. I can't do anything. I won't be effective. As I describe in the book, I met Newt Gingrich. Newt hypnotized me. I always say that. And he said, look, we have a small window of opportunity to change America as we know it. We can, you know, help people. We can do this. We can do that. And I said, wow, that would be a great thing to do. At that point in time, I didn't turn to my staff and say, we can become so powerful. We can eat dinners. I didn't do that. I actually bought into what Newt Gingrich was saying, and I embarked on that course. Now, somewhere along the way, I played the game of, You want to stay in power. You want to help the constituents. You want to build highways. You know, I was very active in jobs, stand up for steel in the district. I love the constituents. I apologize to them in here at the beginning of the book. But I got convinced in my mind, in order to do that, I had to do the assessments for chairman. I had to raise the money. I had to give other members money, or I was going to lose my power to do good things for the district. Somewhere along the line, the doing good things for the district took the back seat to the power side and to the money side. So playing the game, it morphed me into something I didn't want to be. So I feel I ended up for the right reasons in office and just eroded that.
You know, you, I can't remember, in your chapter about hitting bottom with your addictions, you invoked the memory of Senator Ted Gray of Columbus.
Yes.
I covered him in the Senate at the same time you were in the Senate, the Ohio Senate. You served there together. You liked him, and you liked his style. He was a funny guy, very witty, very bright, no nonsense and fair, as you said. That made me wonder at the path you took. And if you look back and you see where it diverged, was it the Newt Gingrich moment or where? Because you rubbed elbows with some great lawmakers.
Oh, they're great people. And again, when one looks at my life, when I die, if nobody has graffiti Jack Abramoff's name on my tombstone, and please run down to Blair, Ohio, and please just spray paint Jack Abramoff on the back of my tombstone. If you put the entire time I spent with Jack Abramoff, it's probably 6 weeks of my lifetime. I'm not going to be known for increasing the penalties for nonpayment of child support in Ohio. I'm not going to be known for House Bill 478 with Representative Wayne Jones, which did private reform on the healthcare system in Ohio and did away with pre-existing conditions on a limited basis. I'm not going to be known for the Help America Vote Act, make it, you know, easier to vote, harder to cheat. I'm not going to be known for the Braille coin for the blind. I'm not going to be known for Stand Up for Steel. I'm going to be known for Jack Abramoff. I understand that. So I didn't write this book so anybody says, wow, I was just so wrong about Bob. You know, there's so many aspects to people's lives. So to say, you know, where did we go wrong? Up to our final days in office, I say us, the staff and I did still try to help people. Now, I'm not trying to convince anybody I'm a great, great guy, but it just went wrong somewhere along the line. I can't pinpoint the exact place. I would say Congress fueled it on steroids. If we thought there were campaign problems and pay to play in the Ohio legislature and problems there, Congress just took it and multiplied it by 9,000 times. Once I got out there, getting into the game of the system was a problem. That's why today I say, take that game away. And let people do their jobs. Don't make them fall into this. They're good people. Don't make them fall into this mold of you have to do all of the money things to make it right. So I failed personally in along the line too. Behavioral errors, a lot of problems, addiction. But at the end of the day, I can't pinpoint the exact bright line moment.
I'm talking with Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman, author of a new book. It's called Sideswiped, Lessons Learned, Courtesy of the Hitmen of Capitol Hill. We'll return in a moment. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Coming up next hour on All Sides with Ann Fisher, the culture of drag kings and queens in Columbus, with the documentary filmmaker and her subjects. That's coming up starting at 11 o'clock on All Sides with Ann Fisher.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, state-level moves on abortion. North Dakota, Arkansas, and more are reining it in. Where does this go? That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point comes your way starting at 1 o'clock today and every day Monday through Friday on 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from Ohio State's Ross Heart Hospital, helping to build healthy hearts with a 2013 wellness series. Heart disease is the leading cause of death in the United States, and regular physical activity is a great way to prevent it. Details about Ohio State's wellness series are at go.osu.edu/series.
The weather forecast is all pleasant this week. Partly sunny today with a high of 43. Tonight mostly clear and a low of 26. Then on Tuesday sunny and a high tomorrow of 43. Mostly clear Tuesday night, a low of 25. Then by Wednesday, sunny skies and a high of 48 degrees. Right now, we still have 37 degrees at our studios here on the Ohio State University campus.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Bob Ney. He's the author of a new book. It's called Sideswiped, Lessons Learned Courtesy of the Hitmen of Capitol Hill. You may recall Bob Ney. He was a six-term congressman from Ohio. He had won 66% of the vote in his district in 2004. By 2006, he announced he would not seek re-election, and his ties to lobbyist Jack Abramoff would lead to criminal charges and 2.5-year prison sentence. He served 17 months in federal prison, and his book is about his life in politics, his life in prison, and more. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Mark in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you, Ann. I'd had the chance to meet Bob as a state senator back in the early or mid-1980s, as with some citizen activist, and we were concerned when Home State Bank and all the other savings and loans collapsed in just a few short days. And at the time, he seemed very knowledgeable and informative on that, and he had some overseas experience. And I'm pleased with his transformation, which reminds me of Jonathan Perkins, who had a similar experience. And I guess question for him, with his background in the corridors of power, the savings and loans collapse had a lot to do with housing bubbles and shady foreign investments. And with the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act in the 90s, which went through Congress, there's a lot of bad money out there in the global financial system and real estate bubbles that collapsed in the late 2000s. And his thoughts on how in the power makers, their influence on some of the deregulation and things that have allowed these boom and bust cycles to occur in Cyprus, and if he had any practical suggestions on maybe an Iranian policy for the U.S., that would be
well,
productive.
Now,
thank you.
Okay, Mark. Thanks, Mark.
Good questions. First of all, I was the key vote when Home State Savings tied, you know, to give people their money. And
SNL.
It was
the resolution
disaster.
Of the SNL crisis in 1988.
And that was a great citizens' lobby effort to get help. As far as caller, Glass-Steagall is unbelievably, you know, I look at the whole deal. Bill Clinton was president of the United States. Jim Leach was chairman of financial services. I was on that committee from the first day I entered to the last day. I eventually became chairman of housing subcommittee with Maxine Waters, ranking member from California. Having said that, we were convinced that, well, Glass-Steagall has to be repealed, and you had a Democrat and Republican kumbaya holding hands, and let's repeal it, and we'll have different baskets of business, and some will be blended. And a great big fight occurred behind the scenes between the insurance and banking industry. And one has to be extremely careful because at that point in time, if you blend business, you could be asking for trouble. And plus, insurance is regulated under McCarran-Ferguson. It was regulated state by state versus federal. When Fannie Mae ran into trouble, I was not for undoing it because it had a trillion-dollar portfolio, Fannie and Freddie. They're the, you know, providers of the underbacking of money, as I call it. And I had an interesting scenario. It's in the book where the lobbyist, I called him. I said, you know, we've got to do away with this board called OFAO that oversees Fannie, bad accounting practices. This is horrible. He delayed seeing me. When he finally came into my office, he had been in China. And like a dummy, I said, well, what were you doing in China? And he said, they have so many holdings into Fannie and Freddie. I was amazed. I didn't even notice a congressman, the Chinese hands in here. So when you look at it, they're out there, Fannie and Freddie, and they're going to, you know, do housing for the poor. The bottom line, there was predatory lending. That's what the caller's talking about, predatory lending. It's about making money. The bubble goes up. The bubble comes down. People get hurt, but somebody still gets rich. And the predatory lending, I had a bill with Paul Kanjorski. It was called a loan shark bill. But at the end of the day, I wish it would have been discussed because predatory lending needs to be watched. People get into situations they have no idea. There was all kinds of smart deals out there that look good to get people into housing. But at the end of the day, the government needs to have a role in there and needs to be able to protect the consumer. The Iranian thing, I still think we missed, and my book outlines it, we missed the boat so many times. It was just all about the, and the head of the Iranian regime, Ahmadinejad, is terrible. But you know, we haven't, through the sanctions, we haven't done anything to stop Iran's behavior. So I still think a collaborative effort to the UN, keeping a communication line open, is good, because I do believe the Bush administration wanted to go to war with Iran, and that may not be the solution.
All right. I mean, we should go back and just tell people you were briefly caught up in the Iranian Revolution back in 1970.
I lived there in 1978.
78, 79. But you were not involved in it. You were just caught up a little bit.
Well, the government, maybe you'll blame the revolution on me. You know,
yeah.
Alberto Gonzalez.
You were in country.
I was in country.
You spent several months after, you know, there. You returned unemployed. You speak Farsi still?
Yes.
We have an email from Rick. He says, can Bob discuss how his political views have been moderated through his experience and the nature of hubris among his Republican colleagues that still exists, and maybe how it can be overcome? So, first of all, how your political views have been moderated through your experience. You're still a Republican? Or you identify as Republican?
I'm still a Republican.
Whatever that means nowadays?
Well, I don't know. I don't know that the Republican Party knows what it means. That's
okay.
The problem with the Republican Party. Look, Republican Party sort of brings people in and says, well, if you want to be a Republican, we'll give you this test. We'll do a litmus test, put you on probation, and decide whether you want to be a Republican in a year. I mean, the Republican Party has to open its mind up to different ideas it has. My views have not changed on a fiscal note, because I this is insane what both sides are doing with the imbalance and all the nonsense of the fiscal cliff and sequestration. They're just not doing their jobs. So I've fiscally stayed conservative. I've always been pro-labor. I always will be. A fair wage, minimum wage.
Well, you come
wage.
From a labor.
Yeah, and that's why I sought Jack Abramoff to get close to Tom DeLay. Tom DeLay was mad at me for my pro-labor views, which is just funny to even say that's why I sought Jack Abramoff out. And then when it comes to prison, I was a lawmaker. I became a lawbreaker. I think somehow members of Congress have maybe they should put him in prison a year and then let him run for Congress.
I can't remember. Were you in the Ohio General Assembly when they were passing all the three strikes and your out bills? And,
sure.
And was
sure.
That before you left for Congress or after?
No,
I can't remember.
No, I can't remember.
I think it
either.
Was early 90s.
But to help clarify this, I would have voted for that.
Yeah.
Sure. I would have voted
Everyone
for
Everyone was running for lock, sheriff back
lock
then.
Him, lock him up. Throw the key away. When I served in Morgantown Federal Prison with 1,300 people, 78% of which are drug offenders. Look, these aren't the prosecutors say, oh, we just got the big drug dealer. These aren't the Medellin drug cartel people. These are addicts. The majority of them are addicts, but they become a statistic of the, quote, drug dealer. So, you know, we failed on some of the war on drugs. But my views of the system have changed quite a lot. And also, the Republicans need to take a look at some issues, and doesn't mean that they're going to give up their philosophy, but some of the social issues, they got hijacked by right-wing ideologues that were so far to the right they were falling off the table, and they got hijacked on the social issues, and the Republican Party needs to just take a breath and try to find out where it's at. So to answer I am juxtaposed to some of the traditional Republican views.
Brad from Columbus emailed us. He writes, it is difficult to see Bob's appearance on your show and his claims that he's been wronged by John Boehner and others as anything more than a person who had a great amount of public trust and betrayed it, now trying to capitalize on his last chance to make money. When the political game benefited him and his colleagues, he probably had nothing to say about broken deals and those left empty-handed. Has Mr. Ney identified and apologized to those he wronged? Is the money he's making going to benefit some of those parties? Is that part of his spiritual reawakening?
Well, first of all, I've apologized multiple times. I've apologized again in this book. I've apologized, I'll re-apologize today to everybody in the country, to my constituents, family, friends. As far as this book, I am not by any stretch of imagination going to become rich off of this book. I actually wasn't going to do this book. And, I was pursued by Changing Lives Press to make the book. This is not going to sell a million copies. And so it doesn't matter to me what anybody thinks of my motives. I know my motives. I'm telling a story. And look, most people, when they're trying to stay out of trouble, do lie. Most people, after they come out of prison, have a more factor of an honesty to them. But nobody is going to stand up hardly in Congress today and say what I'm saying. They all know it. This is an open secret, this book is. Everybody knows that the trips are still going on. Everybody knows that they're still having big dinners and they're doing it legally. Nobody's going to stand up and do that because they're part of the system. I hope that I can provide light that gives them a leeway out to say yes, you know, and what Jack Abramoff's saying, what Bob Ney's saying. So I can't help what the caller thinks. I know my own motives.
Patrick, in Columbus, you're on the air. You want to get some advice from Bob Ney?
Yes, thank you, Ann, for taking my call. Hi, Bob. This is Pat Manley. I'm glad to see you're doing well.
Hi, Pat.
And I've known Bob for 51 years. We went to grade school together, high school, college. Bob, this whole event with Jack Abramoff, and I think I can speak from a different perspective than a lot of people, it's not the Bob I knew. It's not the Bob I knew beforehand. It's not the Bob I knew afterward, and sometimes I still kind of scratch my head about the whole thing. And Bob, I'm curious if you can throw some advice out there, possibly not only for people in politics but in other industries. And you used the term bright line. There was no bright line moment. But how do people like you, you know, one of the good guys, get drawn into something like this? And how do you extract yourself from it if you're partway in? I've seen.
You mean without having to go to federal prison?
Exactly.
Okay. Is there an easier way?
I've seen it in my own industry, in the construction industry, from time to time, and it just amazes me how that can happen to certain people like yourself. And I just wonder if there's any advice you can give to other people on how to really avoid it, or once they've gotten themselves into it, how do they get themselves back out?
Thanks. And thank you, Pat. I know Pat from Belmont County. I didn't realize for 51 years. I thought we were younger than that. But he's a great guy. In fact, I wish a guy like Pat would run for politics. Taking this, Pat's question, taking it beyond politics for a second, and because I say this in the book, apply it to any aspect of your life. No matter what you're doing, no matter who you work with, if something doesn't feel right at work, if something doesn't feel right in your dealings with other people, if it smells wrong, it seems to be wrong, if it makes your gut turn a bit, just say no. Like Nancy Reagan used to say, just say no. Think about it. Look ahead. Try to make sure that you look who you're dealing with anywhere at work. So I hope people can take those lessons. Also, watch what you ingest into your body of substances. Today, I work with 12-step recovery programs, and it's not that alcohol made me do it, but I have to tell people substances can cloud your judgment in your family relations. It can cloud your judgment at work in people you're dealing with. So to answer Pat's question, I hope that the aspects of just keeping your eyes open, feeling something's wrong, having the guts at the time to just say no, no matter what it costs you at your workplace, I hope those are things that people can do, and I hope they read this and can take it, that lesson.
Thank you, Patrick. Ohio Senator Rob Portman recently announced that he has changed his mind about same-sex marriage and now supports it. He said it was his personal experience of learning that his own son was gay that changed his mind and that he never thought about it before. To what extent, in your opinion, does personal experience have to do with how elected officials are supposed to do their job? I mean, do you have to go to federal prison to understand whether or not the laws that have been enacted work when it comes to incarcerating criminals and fighting crime?
There's always there are a lot of contradictions for people, because on a personal level, somebody may have had a relative who was shot, for example, by a gun, and they don't like guns, and they feel bad about the death of their relative. But at the end of the day, they might support the Second Amendment because their constituents support it. They feel the Constitution provides Second Amendment. So I'm trying to just give you ideas.
Yeah.
Senator Portman, who was against the gay marriage, and all of a sudden his son comes out to him, and he has a total change. Now, on the other side, people say, well, Portman should still respect what the constituents of the state want. Well, it's a blend. So personal things that happen, you know, come into play. Now, as far as the prison side to this, if I knew what I knew now that's a great, that's worth a lot of money. Hindsight, you know, is 20/20 and worth money. But at the time, I was making laws affecting prisons for whatever reason, and I don't think it was total callousness on my part. Nobody came up and said, by the way, this is going on and that's going on. We just passed the laws and we put more money into the prisons, and nobody really that I knew of dug into the thing. So personal experiences, I wish I would have maybe ran into a relative that came out of prison 15 years ago and said, hey, Bob, guess what happened to me? Maybe I wish I would have, maybe would have, could have, should have read a book about prisons and found out. So, yes, personal experiences do happen. Let's hope they happen earlier in life than later to affect a person's vote.
Cassandra sent us this comment. She says, I worked as an intern in Bob Ney's Ohio Senate office over 20 years ago when I was in college, and the Bob Ney I knew cared deeply about his constituents. When people called who had run out of heating oil, he would send someone to their house with $50 worth of kerosene. At the same time, he was dedicated to his southern and eastern Ohio constituents. He was cosmopolitan in that he had lived in Iran and Saudi Arabia. He would tell us about eating lunch at the same hotel with Idi Amin. Wow.
Thanks. I know I haven't seen her in years. Well, she was like many people. Cassandra did such great service to constituents. We had so many good staff people. I'm sorry they've got, you know, tainted if they say they worked in our office. They did a lot of wonderful things for people. The staff really were tremendous.
You know, you were a born politician, it sounds like. I mean, people thought it, that you were lauded for your style of quote unquote retail politics and so forth. Do you think you're ever going to? I know that you're working, you know, as an analyst with Talk Radio News Service. But what about getting back into politics again? Not maybe as the politician, but.
Well, I had a lot of. I live here in Ohio. I'm in the old district. I call it all the time near the Ohio River. And mm-hmm. I have people that have asked me to run again. One of the newspapers recently said maybe, you know, I would run again. And I really haven't had any interest in doing that. But as far as ideas for people, I'd be happy to do it. They'll have to keep it secret, because if anybody says Bob Ney gave me his ideas, you know, for my campaign, it's going to hurt him in the election process. But as far as providing ideas for people, I love politics. I like the energetic give and take of public debate. I always have. I always will. It's, you know, there are several addictions in people's lives, and that's one of them for me, the addiction of politics. I still follow it.
Well, you do. And so has anyone asked your advice on running campaigns and so forth?
Democrats and Republicans have asked it. In the interest of being such a fair guy, I hope these days, I'm not going to say their names. I don't want to hurt their election prospects.
Okay. I'm not quite sure how much time we have left, but okay. I guess I'm just going to say goodbye to you now where we have a connection difficulty. But Bob Ney, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Ann. I enjoyed it.
Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman, author of a new book. It's called Sideswiped: Lessons Learned Courtesy of the Hitmen of Capitol Hill. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.